KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
W Seattle.
My goal is to, in the healthcare committee, listen to everyone and give everybody opportunities to make their decisions, have conversations about them, and try to work together.
There are a lot of get-rich-quick schemes on TV these days. But my system is different. You see, you ain't never gonna be rich. You just ain't. It ain't gonna happen for you. But you can still have a pot of some success. Mine.
Now that my girls are getting older, they don't want to spend that much time with me anyway. So I'll be probably calling around looking for somebody to play cards with me or something. Because I'm getting kind of lonely in this big house.
A forlorn President Obama. His last press conference. We're going to talk about that next hour as we review the news of the week on weekday. I'm Steve Scheer. David Alan Greer on his get rich quick scheme. He's going to join us at about 9:30. And at the top, you heard State Senator Randy Becker. There are questions about the future of the Affordable Care Act in Washington State. Many Republicans oppose the law. Their standard bearer, gubernatorial candidate and Attorney General Rob McKenna, joined the unsuccessful Supreme Court challenge to overturn the law. Now the state Senate is controlled by Republicans as the next phase of the law is rolled out. The state is organizing the one-stop clearinghouse known as the Health Exchanges for 2014. It's where people seeking mandated health insurance should be able to find the packages right for that. Excuse me. The state is also expanding Medicaid coverage in 2014, the money initially coming 100% from the federal government. Supporters and opponents of the Affordable Care Act are watching Randy Becker. State Senator Becker represents the 2nd District, Eatonville. She was first elected in 2008. She is the chair of the Health Care Committee. She will be responsible for overseeing the health care exchanges and the Medicaid expansion. An additional 300,000 state citizens could qualify under the expansion. There are millions of federal dollars coming to the state to subsidize health care insurance. Becker has worked on the business side of the industry. She's worked as a health care administrator of a multi-million dollar surgical clinic, and she helped start several hospital-owned clinics. So how does she see her new oversight responsibilities, and how does she see the act?
Well, there's things that I really like about the Affordable Health Care Act. And what I really like, I think a lot of us can relate to it. We have relatives that have been affected by it or friends, and that's the elimination of the pre-existing clause. So what that means is if you have a history of cancer, you will not be subject to the same questionnaire that you had to fill out according to Washington state law before. And you are guaranteed issue of insurance at the same rate someone else would have insurance. So my brother, for example, with a history of an illness, the company quit providing insurance, and so he had to fill out the medical questionnaire, and his insurance jumped from $400 a month to $1,500 a month. That will no longer happen. And I think that's a real plus for the people of the state of Washington. I also like the fact that as kids are in school and going to college, that we have the ability as parents to provide insurance up to the age of 26. It makes perfect sense to me. Those sorts of things I really like. I do like parts of the exchange, and what I like on the exchange is it's a portal of information that a consumer will be able to go into a website and see side by side a comparison of offerings of carriers inside of the exchange, a side by side comparison so they can make a good decision, you know, what plan would best serve them. What I have concerns with, number one, the timeline. I came from the healthcare field. I was a medical practice administrator. And I have concerns that these timelines are so tight that some of these pieces may not be busy or ready, I'm sorry. And if that's the case, it could actually cause some issues in enrollment. And I think Washington State's really there, but I'm worried that the federal government with the tie-in to your income portion of it may not be quite as ready as I'd like.
Tie in with the income portion, you mean even for Washington State mm-hmm. citizens?
Yes. Yeah, so if you go into the exchange and you qualify for a subsidy, there's a portal into the federal government that then that would tie into your tax returns and show that you, in fact, did earn that kind of an income and you would qualify for, you know, X amount of dollars in a subsidy. There's a linkage there that I went to a conference last week, and there was concern that that linkage may not be ready.
But the exchanges have to be ready by next year. Given that, is the Washington State had moved pretty quickly in those exchanges. Anything overall that you think should or could slow them down?
No, I think actually Washington State's really done a good job. I really do. It's my concern, again, is what information they need to gather from the federal level. Will that be ready?
Are the exchanges going to cost the state money?
The exchange itself, yes, and that's one of my concerns with the exchange. They presented at one of the pre-session meetings a price tag of over $50 million a year. And, you know, I look at this is a new book of business for the state of Washington, one that we've not ever done before. And, of course, you know how our budget's been for the last 4 years and what that $50 million implication can mean to the state of Washington. I come from the business side of the health care, and I would be concerned with that kind of a price tag. And so we'll be asking a lot of questions of them to support that.
But the money initially comes from the federal government, does it not, or is that not right?
To set up the exchange, there were two grants that were awarded. Two sets of monies came in, and those monies have funded the exchange up until the time that it comes live. And then the exchange has to be self-sustaining by 2015. And what that means is, how do we pay for it? So at this point in time, there are three avenues that they're looking at, and we're looking at is, are there other options out there as well? But it would be a kind of like a fee or a tax on the carriers to participate in the exchange, and that then will be part of the mechanism in order to pay for the exchange. There's been talk about whether you're in the exchange or out of the exchange. You can purchase either place. Of course, the federal subsidies are only available in the exchange, but if you purchase outside of the exchange, there are folks that would like to tax or put a fee on that to support the exchange as well.
State Senator Randy Becker is the Eatonville Republican who is chairing the health care committee in the state Senate. So Dave Frocht was quoted in the Times as saying that in the past, Randy Becker has not shown great enthusiasm for health care reform and would be pressured by other Republicans to take a hard line against Obamacare. Have you felt any pressure from other Republicans to take a hard line?
No. No, I did feel pressure when I have to be very honest. When we were looking at the exchange the first year, 2 years ago, where I did vote for the exchange, because what I liked about it is we knew it was probably coming, but it was, again, that one portal of information, a location where people could go and get good information. Last year, though, the first year I felt pressure not to vote for it because it was part of Obamacare. I went against my caucus in some senses to vote for and support the exchange. So the pressures that I'll feel will be no different than any other pressures that I'm feeling on anything else, but it is something that I'll have to weigh and measure everything that I do, like I do with everything
now,
in my life.
Medicaid expansion is also part of this. The Fed pays 100% initially, but by 2020, it shrinks, right, to 90% by 2020, and then the state has to pay the difference. 300,000
right.
More people could be added to our Medicaid rolls. Do we have the money for that in this state by 2020?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, and that's where I have a huge concern. You know, I don't want to promise people that we're going to be able to give them affordable health care and have this one portal of information if it all goes away. One of the things that we're looking at right now is the data. If X amount of people come onto the, Medicaid expansion program, and what actually does that amount to in that 10% if it's projected at 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 people? So we have to take a look at that. We have to work and try to work with the federal government and say, give us the opportunity to work through these things, apply for a waiver. We've already applied. Senator Parlett's waiver went through 2 years ago, but the federal government wasn't flexible, and still they're not flexible. And what could that ultimate cost be?
Flexibility in terms of what?
In how we handle that expansion. Does everybody need the same level of coverage in Medicaid, for example? Do younger people take utilize health care more than older people, or vice versa? It's just a way of looking at how can we get the most bang for our buck.
I see.
Because if we're going to provide this insurance and we're going to say we're going to give you access, we need to make sure that we can really do it long term and not set people up for failure.
Well, of course, that was the problem with the basic health plan over time, because the state didn't have the money to fully fund it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you are looking at these costs, and at the same time, your caucus says that they're going to put education first and find funding for education. What implication is there for finding funding for education in terms of health care costs?
Well, you've hit on a big concern of mine. If you take a look at over the last 20 years and what's happened in our budget, Medicaid has been the fastest growing area in the entire state budget. It has grown 329% in cost in that 20-year period. But the total budget down here has grown 109%. K-12 grew 93% and higher ed 45%. So right now, what's happened is with the Medicaid, it has grown faster than anything else. So it is a concern, and we have to, going forward, we really need to be very analytical in how we can work on cutting the cost, not cutting the cost so that we jeopardize service, because that is one thing that is most important to me, no matter what income level. You and I only have one life to live, and that patient's life has to be considered first and foremost. It's the most important part of this. And that has been my mantra since day one down here, and will continue to be that.
But this is going to be hard. You have a caucus. I mean, there are some members of the Republican Party who think too much money is being spent in Olympia now. Maybe you're one of them. Can you, if the growth is happening, where do you cut it? Where do you stop it?
Well, I think you have to look at, I know that Senator Kaiser has looked at payment reform. All of us are looking at utilizing these pilot programs and what are they teaching. My preference is to involve the providers of care and what they see that they can do to do a more efficient job, not have to repeat tests, et cetera, that will help keep the cost under control. That's one aspect of it. As far as if you're looking at, what are we going to cut, I think that I don't like using the term cut anymore, because the last 4 years I've never been here, but there hasn't been a budget deficit, and they've been huge. And so I would really like to look at, let's figure out how we can do things more efficiently. And there you have cost savings, because the more efficient you can run an organization, the more you save, and that helps pay for some of these other things. So I think it's a broader perspective, but not necessarily all cuts from my perspective. I think the McCleary decision, I am excited about, learning that we have to do what we have to do, because I think that education is the best thing that we can do for the people of the state of Washington, whether you're children or adults. And it's a way out of poverty and a way that we provide a meaningful workforce for the state of Washington. But I do not want to jeopardize those education dollars.
That's Eatonville Republican State Senator Randy Becker. She's the new chair of the Health Care Committee in the Senate. And so in the Senate, she'll be responsible for overseeing the health care exchanges and the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. We'll track it with her. This is Weekday.
Big changes coming to Pierce County Transit. We'll have specifics on that in a minute. KUOW 94.9 Seattle. 35 degrees in Seattle, cloudy and foggy. Forecast says mostly cloudy all day with fog through much of the day and an afternoon high of 40. Later today, some of the country's most influential leaders gather to discuss the creation of a national plan to cut poverty in half in 10 years and completely eradicate poverty within 25 years. Among the panelists, former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, author Jonathan Kozol, and Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University. Ridding America of Poverty. Hear that this afternoon at 1.
Support for KUOW comes from the Cornell Queens Executive MBA program, designed for mid-career managers and professionals, offering weekend classes in Seattle. Local admissions events January 17th and 19th. Information and event registration at cornellseattle.com.
I'm Bernard Woollett. It's 9:20. David Alan Greer, actor and comedian, joins us here in 10 minutes.
Pierce Transit voted this week to cut service by 34% beginning in September. The plan will completely eliminate weekend and holiday service and reduce weekday service after 7 p.m. The Pierce Transit Board had hoped to avoid cuts by proposing a sales tax increase, 0.3%, but the proposition was rejected by voters in November. Rick Talbert is a Pierce County Council member and vice chairman of the Pierce Transit Board. Mr. Talbert, thanks for talking to us.
Well, thank you.
Well, will the daily work commuters feel the cuts at all?
Unfortunately, because of the size of the cuts, our service is going to be impacted throughout the system. The decision that we've made and the area that we're going to concentrate our service efforts on are designed to have the least amount of impact to the greatest number of riders. And so our evening hours are going to be cut back. Some routes will see the number of buses per hour are going to be impacted as well. So the goal was to try to make sure that we continue to serve the greatest number of transit users. But unfortunately, this reduction is going to be felt throughout our system.
You know, why cut weekends and holidays? Why not across the board service cuts?
Well, again, it was an area where we had a great amount of discussion, and ultimately the decision was made to try to have the least amount of impact to the greatest number of riders, and the only way that we could make that work and still have a functioning system was to concentrate that effort on the daily riders Monday through Friday. And unfortunately, we just can't find a way to bring in any considerable amount of weekend hours in that doesn't have a huge detriment to the daily bus rider.
Now, what happens, Rick Talbert, to evening service, the after 7 p.m. service, when Pierce Transit puts through these cuts in September?
Well, again, it's going away, unfortunately. The folks who rely on our bus service, shift workers, folks who may have evening classes, they're going to be impacted greatly. They're going to obviously, for many, hopefully, will find alternative means for their transportation needs. But the cold reality is there are going to be a great number of folks who have depended on transit in order to get to work, in order to get to school or to, their medical appointments, and others are going to be left without service.
We got a comment on our Facebook page from Reese. I was planning on giving up my car since I live in downtown Tacoma, but I'm too nervous now that I will not be able to get around safely, especially at night. You heard comments like that?
Yeah. It's heart-wrenching to listen to folks. And many of us, we've been wrestling with exactly how do we continue to provide our service facing the cuts that we have to make. And realizing that these are human beings. It's not just a matter of reduction in service hours. It's kind of you can look at that and just kind of think of it as a balance sheet. But the reality is that these are people's lives, and many people. This is their lifeline to be able to continue to hold a job or again get to school. It's heart-wrenching to listen to folks as they plead with us to try and keep our service and make sure that they still have access to get to the things that they need to.
Now, initial projections said if the tax that you'd put on the ballot didn't pass, service would be reduced by 53% in Pierce Transit, but the cuts have turned out to be less than that. Why is that?
Well, we are almost entirely dependent on sales tax. More than 70% of the revenue that we have comes directly from sales tax, and sales tax is extremely, I don't want to say volatile, but variable in its collections. It's the area that's been hardest hit due to the recession. At the time that we were putting together the information on the ballot measure, the collections that had been coming in showed that we were going to be on a path that would we would need to cut over 50% to be able to make balance. The good news is that the economy has started to pick up. We've seen a number of months since then of increased sales tax collections, and due to that and some concessions that were made by our labor partners, we've been able to lessen the severity of the service cuts, so that we're currently serving 417,000 service hours. We're looking at a model that's going to end up somewhere in a 270,000 range, and we're able to get to that level because, again, sales tax collections are increasing slightly, and we were able to make some concessions that allowed us to free up some revenue as well.
Pierce Transit Employees Union voted in August to approve a 3-year contract with no cost of living increases. They're also going to pay more of their medical costs. Any chance, Rick Talbert, that between now and September, when the cuts are scheduled to go into effect, an improving economy could lessen the cuts again?
Well, that certainly is the hope. We've set our budget for 2013 with fairly conservative projections on those revenues, which we have historically done. We tend to try to be conservative in our estimates and hope that we actually have better collections. In the past, we were able to use those dollars to build up our reserves, which have allowed us to continue our service levels that we have now, even during this recession. And so, I'm certainly hopeful that the uptick we've seen in our sales tax revenue continues. And from what the economists are saying, that seems to be what is being predicted for now. So I'm hopeful that we're able to see additional revenues come in and hopefully put off or bring back weekend services and improve the system a little bit. But for now, based on what we see, this is the model, and unfortunately it means the elimination of the weekend service.
We're talking about 32% cuts in service. What does that how much money are we talking about here? What's the cut that Pierce Transit is taking in terms of actual dollars?
It's in the $28 million range. It's a substantial number. We've been able to kind of maintain our service because for so many years we were able to build up a healthy reserve, and we've been supplementing our decreased revenues that have been coming in over the last few years with those dollars. Unfortunately, we're at the end of those dollars, and so that's why the cut is happening now. Had we not had those reserves, we would have been having these conversations probably 2 years ago. So The board has consistently had this philosophy of being conservative in our budgets, and I'm hopeful again that we're going to be able to start building up some reserves and bring back some lines of service sometime in the near future.
I imagine that you, like the King County Metro folks, are going to the legislature to try to get more authority for a taxing increase. But Tacoma News Tribune and others were critical of your proposal before the voters, saying it was you should have made it smaller, should have been a smaller tax increase request. Are you going to go back to the voters again, and will it be a smaller tax increase request?
You know, I don't see us going back anytime soon. I think, we've been back, or we've been before the voters twice now, and even though both votes were very close, I don't think we're going to go to the well again, if you will. It's somewhat easy to be an armchair quarterback on this issue and, think that if had we gone for 0.2 cents, it may have passed. When we made the decision, again, we were trying to preserve our service levels, and the 0.3 cents was the number that was going to get us or allow us to try or basically keep the level of service that we were currently providing. 0.2 cents or 0.1 cents still had substantial cutbacks, and we didn't see the wisdom in going out and still having to cut service. We thought that would in itself send a very mixed message to the voters that, we just passed a measure for you folks and now you're cutting services. So that's the thought process that went into how we came to the decision to go for the 0.3 cents.
Very good. All right, Mr. Talbert, thanks for talking to us.
All right, well, thank you.
Rick Talbert is Pierce County Council member. He's vice chair of the Pierce Transit Board. Beginning in September, Pierce Transit will cut its service by 34%. This is Weekday.
It's 9:31. Actor and comedian David Alan Greer joins us in a minute. KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from the Seattle Symphony, presenting the Vancouver Symphony in concert on January 23rd at Benaroya Hall, featuring Grieg's Piano Concerto and Prokofiev's Symphony No. 5. Tickets online at seattlesymphony.org.
Hallucinogenic drugs. Back in the 1960s, neurologist Oliver Sacks tried a lot of them. He says he was seeking enlightenment as well as recreation. Later today, hear him describe his experience of a vivid 13-hour-long opium trip and an auditory hallucination he says saved his life. Oliver Sacks talks about his own trips into the strange world of hallucinations this afternoon at 2.
Support for KUOW comes from the UW Medicine Neighborhood Clinics. UW Neighborhood Clinics is a network of primary care clinics with 9 locations around the Puget Sound area. The clinics offer primary care services from pediatrics to geriatrics. More information is available at uwmedicine.org.
35 degrees in Seattle, cloudy and foggy. Forecast says mostly cloudy today with fog through much of the day and an afternoon high of 40. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 9:33. The sound of ice and rocks in 25 minutes.
Whoa, what's that going to be? David Alan Greer is a multi-talented performer, television, on Broadway. He danced on Dancing with the Stars.
Really? Didn't have to bring that up.
Been in Porgy and Bess. David Mamet play Race. He is in town for 1, 2, 3, 4 shows, 2 of which are sold out, 2 of which have limited tickets left at Bellevue's Parlor Live Comedy Club. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I've been enjoying going over all your different appearances through the beauty of YouTube on The View and everything. Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, The View. There was one point where I think I was the most, I'd been on Jimmy Kimmel's show the most of any person. I don't know if that's still true, but I'm up
there. I think
you
were going to have a throwdown with Kathy
Griffin
and yeah.
Adam Carolla.
And Adam Carolla.
Yeah. So. Maybe they've surpassed me now.
All right, here's what we didn't know in looking you up, and I just want to start with this. And, of course, Wikipedia, maybe true, maybe not, right?
Well, we can talk about it.
Yeah, I know. I saw some things. But it says that you got your start on the National Public Radio drama adaptation of Star Wars in 1980.
Absolutely true.
He was the voice of a nameless X-Wing fighter.
They're down there, sir.
And here's what we think is you.
All right. Renegade 4, stay closer to your transport ship.
I copy, boss.
Fighters, stick close to the convoy and keep your eyes open. All of you.
Renegade leader, this is Renegade 7. Boss, I have a visual sighting, a number of small spacecraft coming at high velocity from Sector 4.
I gotta tell you this.
They're moving awfully fast.
That's good. That's very good.
Let me tell you something. This my teacher at Yale was John Madden, who people know him from Shakespeare in Love and the Mr. Corelli's Violin Mandolin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was my Shakespeare teacher, and he goes, David, you know, I'll be in Los Angeles if you're there. I'm directing Star Wars. And I was like, Star Wars? The radio version. But he offered me this job. It was like $800 for 4 days. And that was like, are you kidding me? Yeah. So that's how that happened. And it financed my whole summer vacation in L.A. that time.
Did you ever listen to the whole thing?
I have a copy of it. Michelle Norris gave me the whole set.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not on my reel. That's
your guess. No. Well, it's pretty fun to have heard that you were the nameless X-Wing fighter pilot.
Yeah, that is good real delivery. Nerd stuff. But, you know, Mark Hamill was there, and it was cool. Perry King was in the cast.
Oh, that's right. He was Han Solo, right?
Right. And then Anthony C-3PO or C-PO, I don't know.
Yeah, I listened to it.
Yeah, it was very popular.
I am a nerd.
Well, I don't want to say very popular, but whatever.
It was huge.
It was huge.
You're not going to the inauguration this time.
No, you know. Well, this is the beauty of history and change that I'm proud and happy to say, he's a black president, big deal. You know.
It happened.
It did happen. That was a different time. It feels like a million years, a million lifetimes ago. But I do feel in a different way. President Obama's reelection was bigger and more important and more impactful than the first time. Because had he lost this election, then it would have been one of those crazy things.
Why did he lose?
Did we have a black president? I was there. Oh, it was a blip. An outlier. That's what it would have been like. Because this, to me, was more exciting in a different way. In that the electorate clearly has changed. Everything about it, the voting population, has changed in America, and never to go back to the way it was before. It's just...
I think I saw you in a clip on Chocolate News, the Comedy Central mm-hmm. show, saying that he should quit, leave at the top.
Right. I'm out!
Yeah.
It's like
Dave Chappelle. Psy.
Yeah, like Psy. Psy has said he's retiring from music after Gangnam Style, which is perfect. How can he top that?
You know,
a piece. No, well, there's more that had to be done, and president was reelected. It was awesome. I went to an election party, and there was one Republican crazy lady in the corner. It's like, you'll see. You'll see. Well, everybody was silent, you know, because the first returns are coming in. I'm like, well, maybe she knows something. Because the Republicans were like, you'll see. We have a whole bunch of your rural old white bus drivers from Alabama that are going to get. And finally, she was not right. But it was a glorious night. It was a glorious night to watch Fox News. That was
awesome. Is that what you did? Is that where you were? You were all on Fox. Right.
Yeah, because it was just disbelieving. No, your wife is sleeping with someone else. Those tapes are wrong. That footage is wrong. Yeah, it was crazy.
Do you do everything in your stand-up, right? Politics, social?
I can't. You know, I have to comment on things that are happening now, not everything, but things that are moved by that I feel I have something to say. I don't know. There's some comics, a lot of friends of mine who purposefully avoid any current goings on. They don't want to talk about it. And I like telling political jokes in a mixed crowd. You know, or Michael Jackson jokes to all black audiences. They're like, oh, boo, boo, boo. You know, that's fun to me. I mean, I really like doing that. But I talk about a little bit.
What did Chris Rock say? Oh, that Obama was the first who was the white president.
Yeah, well, you know, I disagree. Or people.
You do.
People, of course. I mean, I talked about how people used to say Bill Clinton was the first black president. I'm like, really? Really? Given what we know Bill Clinton did, With that certain intern, had that been a black president, he would have been lynched on the front lawn of the White House. He's not the first black president.
By the way, is this your official Twitter feed, David Alan Greer?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's a lot of man tied. It's me, a picture of me in this. Yep, that's
you.
There's a couple of
a lot of Tao.
I'm fascinated by this. All of yesterday, it's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable. 3 years. It's a convoluted story. I could not get enough of it. Lance Armstrong, who cares? Big deal.
He cheated. He doped.
Yeah, he's not a sympathetic figure.
Tao is. So he had a grandmother. He didn't have a girlfriend. He did get duped, at least for a while.
I think he did.
Into thinking that she was dying of leukemia.
But for 3 years, that's the love of your life?
He never met her.
For 3 years.
It's hard for me to believe it.
Well, I met a girl 2 weeks ago on Twitter, and we talked twice on the phone. I was like, this is ridiculous. You got to send me to start sexting. I mean, what is going on? For 2 weeks, I was like, I have to hear your voice. I need to see your face. I can't. It's unexplainable. That's why I'm so amazed. It's going to come out. But what I was amazed by is that so much people have invested. He broke no law. He's no longer a student at Notre Dame. The vice president was crying like a baby on TV, just talking about this kid. He is so honest. He will be damaged for life. Now, I'm fascinated. I'm like, why?
Heisman potential, right?
He didn't win.
I know, but he was close.
He didn't win. So that is the most intriguing. Apparently, from what I understand, it is a guy who perpetrated this hoax on Manti Te'o, and, you know. It's crazy.
Man, it was all over television yesterday.
Oh, that was awesome, man.
Does it ever make you nervous how television is so swept and swayed by every little shift?
Well, everything's an outrage.
I agree.
Everything's. I remember when I got kicked off of Dancing with the Stars. It's a little.
Did they kick you out when they grabbed you?
They kick you off. You know, and I cursed out the judges. But it started like for an hour. You run the gauntlet. You know, how do you feel? Well, I just want to thank God, my country, my daughter, my wife. You know, finally at the end, we got to say, somebody goes, how do you really feel? And so I just started telling them. And by the next morning, I woke up and one of my friends texted me. He says, what did you do? And I go, what? He says, you're on the front page of AOL. Outrage. Star goes crazy. Curses out the judges. I just never thought it would go like that. In an hour, my manager called. He said, it's going to cost you some money, but we think we can fix this. And I'm like, you mean to tell me Robert Downey Jr. was high on crack cocaine, broke into a neighbor's house. Now he's up for an Oscar. I'm going to lose everything? I was like, oh, yeah. And so the beauty of it, to answer your question, is in 3 days, there was a different outrage. The news cycle moves so quickly that unless you blow up a school or kill someone, you're pretty much, you're going to be okay. You know, you're going to be okay. You can't dwell on it. And blow up a school is no way connected with any real crime. I'm just saying.
It was just an example.
Thank you.
David Alan Greer is an actor, a comedian. He's been before the public eye for over 30 years.
I have.
Are the paparazzi, are the TMZ people looking for you when you're traveling your world?
Nah, there's one TMZ guy.
He wants to.
Well, no, he's actually, we kind of became friends. I was at the car wash and he goes, because when they would stop me with my daughter, she just turned 5 and I don't engage because I'm trying to have time with my daughter. She's a minor and come on. What are your expectations on the first date with a really hot chick? It's like, come on, man, I can't answer that.
That's the kind of stuff they toss out at you?
That's an intelligent question. What kind of underwear do you wear on a date? Just stupid. Oh. I don't have time. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? And so the guy came over and he goes, I'm sorry, I won't bother you with your daughter, but if I'm come to you in the parking lot, will you give me something? And I go, if you catch me on a good day, but I haven't. Sorry.
You went to Yale. You were a serious actor.
Yes.
I want to ask you about being in a Mammoth play and Porgy and Bess. But what was the transition to comedy? Was there a moment when I saw you joke on Jimmy Kimmel about how nobody took you seriously? You wanted to be the serious actor in that. But what did really happen? What was the transition?
Well, you know, I went to Yale. I do remember we did a stand-up show at Yale, but it was very collegiate. Hey, you know that professor who always wears his plaid? You know, we did it, you know, like a campus thing. And I came out of school. I was on Broadway. And what really happened is a lot of my friends were comics. Keenan,
just hold that. That's a pretty big transition. I came out of school. I was on Broadway.
Yeah. That's true.
What happened?
My first job.
Really?
It was my first professional job. I starred in the first. It was about Jackie Robinson. It was a musical nominated for a Tony. And so then that kind of brought me into the business. And I started working. I did Soldier's Play with Denzel Washington. Sam Jackson was in it. The late, great Adolph Caesar at the Negro Ensemble. I started doing movies. I worked with Robert Altman in my first film, Streamers. Yeah, we won the Golden Lion, Best Acting Ensemble at Venice Film Festival that year. And so I was off and running. But when I came to Soldier Story, I met Robert Townsend, who introduced me to the Wayans family, Keenan and Sean. Well, Sean was a little kid then, and Marlon was a little baby, you know, 14 or something. Anyway, we all became friends, and my nightly ritual when I was there during pilot season would hang out with these comics in comedy clubs. And it's just by osmosis. You should do time. So I started doing open mics for fun, and that's kind of how that element got in there. But I never planned I didn't have this big picture for comedy. It wasn't like, I'm going to do a special, then I'm going to get my own show, which will fail, which will only lead me to more obscurity. No, I didn't plan all that, but it was something I did and when I was between jobs. So when In Living Color hit, after the first month, my agent calls and says, we have 15 colleges and universities that want to book you. What should we tell them? So that's what led to
Wow.
Yeah, because it was that Living Color was that hot. I mean, it hit that hard. So,
here's a little. We have a little clip from Living Color, Men on Films.
Uh oh. Which brings us to the time in the show when we discuss our two favorite films on video of all times. Now, for me, it's got to be the movie Big, starring Tom Hanks as a man with a low boy inside him. I believe we can all relate to that. For all the fine films on video cassette, let's give it a patented films on video snap. Two snaps and a rewind.
a cultural touchdown. Two snaps and a rewind.
I guess it was. It was. It's funny. We did the pilot, and I remember my agent came, and we did Men On at the pilot, and she calls me the next day, and she goes, "You know they're doing the snaps at Paramount." I was like, it's at Universal now. Everyone, this is taking the city by storm. It was pretty funny. I was like, wow.
Do you think that that show, well, don't you think that show had challenged assumption, broke barriers, came at a good time in terms of race? Or do you think it was
Absolutely.
You do, right? Yeah. So did you guys think about it? Did you guys talk about it?
Not at the time. I mean, it's funny. We talked about it, but I didn't see it. You know, Jim Carrey, interestingly, would sit in my dressing room that first year and go, this is history. This is history. They're going to be talking about this for forever. But you have to remember, in 1990, we had cell phones, but I think my talk time was 15 minutes. We had computers and everything, but the internet isn't what it is now. I think my search engine was Gopher back then. I didn't know. I'll give you an example. I did a play recently, and sitting in the dressing room, you know, in La Jolla. It wasn't recently. It was a few years ago. And everybody in the cast had their computers. And we started talking about Living Color. They all punched up, via YouTube, their favorite sketch. Another guy punched up a clip of me at the Tonys in 1981. The availability of information was not what it is now. So I could not have anticipated in 20 years that there would be this whole other generation appreciating the work because it's so available.
It's funny, NPR did a story this morning on cultural references and how we don't have four networks, so the cultural references are sometimes broken up. People don't always understand the same things. But I think against that is just what you said. Because of the availability, we can all start to swim in it over time. And share you, it.
Yeah, we cut, clip, and paste and make our own cultural scrapbooks. There, when I did Maya Angelou on SNL, these are the cardinal rules of comedy. Someone asks you to do you, Lauren Michaels said, do you do any impersonations? Now, the cardinal rule is you got to name someone, number one, that no one's ever done. Therefore, you cannot fail. So as a joke, I said Maya Angelou. No one had ever done Maya Angelou in 1996. And they were like, really? I'd never done it. But I knew I could not fail. So
you just made her up. Did you make her up right there?
On the spot. I said, I can nail that. So then we started talking about what if she really sold out? What if she started doing commercials? And that led to these Maya Angelou things, which killed. Not only that, if you go on YouTube, they're Maya Angelou tributes. So they're dudes that are doing their Maya Angelou. I'm the first person to ever do it, but that's how it happened.
Wait, didn't you do it? Didn't it recur in that episode?
Yes, because right. we started riffing. The writers started riffing Pennzoil, Butterfingers. You know, I hosted the show twice, and they asked me a third time. I couldn't do it. And they asked me to join the cast. I couldn't do it. But anyway, this was one of those things where it hit so big that we kept doing it. But then I got really jealous. Other people would do it.
Selling Pennzoil? I don't remember that. How was she?
Pennzoil. You, sir, are a warrior. You know, with words, your bullets are the vernacular. You attack society. You know, Pennzoil. You know, that whole thing. But I was booked with Maya Angelou to appear at a traditionally black college for some festival. And I was like, really? This is going to be awesome. But I think someone actually told her who I was, and it mysteriously disappeared after a couple of weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I would have hoped she would have had the sense of humor for that.
I don't know. I don't know what really happened. They say, well, they've changed your schedule. You're no longer needed. So that's all I can tell you.
David Alan Greer is going to be how many shows? I keep
two tonight, two tomorrow. Tonight. There's five altogether.
7:30, very limited tickets. 10 o'clock, very limited. Saturday sold out. What's the difference between, and Sunday was sold out. What's the difference between, you were there Sunday too, right? Or just Saturday? No, that's right. What's the difference between a 7:30 show and a 10 p.m. show for you?
Probably the audience.
That's it?
Yeah, because for me, I'm giving it to you. But
Are you writing all your material?
Yes, let's hope so.
Well, I mean, you're improvising some.
Yeah, some of it. I mean, some of it is with the audience and also...
Let us hope so.
Yeah. While some people buy material...
I see. Yes.
No, I never have. I failed on my own. But it's you're saying the difference between 7:30 and 10:30. 7:30 is more of a date audience. You know, it's early. They've probably gone out to dinner.
Not as drunk.
Exactly. In a nutshell. But that's what I found later shows. You know, here, Seattle is very, you know, this is intelligent, so I can talk more about politics and, you know.
More public radio jokes.
Oh, I love.
More jokes where you include the names of medical drugs. That you did on the Adam Carolla show, right?
Estadirol, yes. That, again, I mean... Love Adam Carolla. Love Dr. Drew. He's a dear friend. And it just was spur of the moment. And it just, we started. Most of that was because we're in the studio. It was to make them laugh. And Dr. Drew lost it. He was crying, spilled his water. He and Adam.
Well, we listened to it on the magic of the radio. And yeah. He was just throwing out names of drugs, and you were turning them all into characters. They were living characters.
It started though off the cuff. Now he makes me do it.
He does.
Yeah, he makes me do it. But it really started when Dr. Drew, we had a caller who is like, yeah, I'm feeling really depressed. I can't leave my room, and I won't stop smoking. I smoke closed cigarettes, but too many. He was like, well, here's what you need. You need to get on a mood stabilizer. And, you know, he starts naming all these drugs, and I was like, really? Dude, lighten up. You know, I was teasing him, so that's how it started.
I want to ask you about Broadway, but before I do, real quick, so you've done a lot of radio.
I have. I wanted to do a radio show. I mean, we were talking in the car. I don't want to do a podcast because I don't want to do that to the world. There's too many podcasts, too many comedians.
Well, there's a lot of radio shows.
Yeah, but there's a podcast is basically an open mic for a comedian, and he's never given the light. So they just keep talking. So, no. Maybe I will. I don't know.
But a radio? I'm like, you live in L.A., right?
Yeah, I love radio. But it's the whole thing has changed now. Like, now I don't need to do a radio show. I can do my own. I can do a podcast, which is basically your own radio show. Do you believe that or what? I'm trying to...
No, I believe it. I was thinking about Mark Maron, that WTF show. I mean, that guy's...
It's a podcast.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And he's got a lot of people listening.
He does. But, I mean, that takes... work. I mean, he's interviewing. I heard him interview Judd Apatow. You know, I don't know. I'm because he's.
Whereas radio show, live radio show, you just come in. You just go.
Here we go. You just by the seat of your pants. That's right. Podcast is real. No, but I'm saying he's built his following slowly, and now it's like anything. You know, it's like Girls or Louis. It's the show that what are they doing now? It's I want to get in. Sean Penn's going to be on Girls. You know, that'll be great.
That is interesting. The movie stars in, multiple platforms. Yeah. All right, 2012, co-star in Revival of Porgy and Bess. You played Sport and Life, right?
Mm-hmm.
The pimp. You got the pimp character.
Pimp and a drug dealer.
Well, very good.
Yeah.
Typecast. Right. Here's a little taste of that. Porgy and Bess, that's a big deal.
It is. It was amazing to do, to work with Audra McDonald, 5-time Tony winner, Diane Paulus, Susan Laurie Parks. The cast was awesome. It was, Broadway's great. We would do these discussion sessions, and they would say, how do you do it every night? I was like, what are you on Broadway, man? What are you, nuts? People clapping. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I had so much fun doing it, but it was a long time. It was like a year. So that's the longest run I've ever done on Broadway.
A year. How long were you on in Race, the Mammoth play?
That was about 6 months. It was a limited production for us, the main cast. It went on after we all left. James Spader and Kerry Washington and Richard Thomas stayed, and we all left. So.
Did you like doing Mammoth lines?
Oh, David Mamet has been one of my theatrical heroes since I started, since I was a student. To meet him, to work with him in a new play, which was in my resume until I had done Race, that was something that was missing, like to do a straight play on Broadway, but a new play written by David Mamet, directed by him, was a dream. He was so much fun. He really loves actors, which is kind of rare to experience in your career.
So you played Henry, right?
Yes.
I like this line. World goes to sleep at night, Mr. Strickland wakes up and it needs two things, a cup of coffee and some vicious gossip.
Of course, Ezra Manti-Teo.
There we are, back right to it.
Yeah. It really was a joy. And James Spader is still a friend and carries him one of my good friends. And it was just awesome. It was cool.
I think Maya Angelou's a public radio listener.
Oh, of course. Yeah. She is. It's rust. My Maya Angelou is rusty. But,
you need to get her to pledge to public radio. A pledge spot.
This is Maya radio. Angelou. Roses are red, violets are blue. Give to public radio because I told you to. Freedom.
Yes. You always invent freedom.
That was nice of you to come in and talk to us.
What, is it over now?
It's done.
I'm going home to eat breakfast in bed.
That was nice of you to get up to come in then.
Thanks, man. This is classy stuff. I love public radio. I listen to it all day, all night.
KPCC? Or KCRW? Which KCRW. Is your KCRW?
Actually, what I do is I listen to the New York feed, WNYW, because it starts at 3 in the morning.
See, this is why you should do a podcast, because you're untethered from time.
It's true. I could do it, but I do have a food blog called The Chocolate Glutton, which is serious.
This is true?
Absolutely. You can punch it in.
I'm punching it in.
And
all right. I guess we're supposed to be done, aren't we?
Wait. No, you got to talk.
Go ahead.
No, for real. I've been doing it for a few years, and I was telling
Dag's food blog, my cooking adventures, chocolate Absolutely.
Cutlet. My daughter's fifth birthday was at my house, so I have a wine cellar in my house. So I gave the kids pigs in a blanket, homemade ice cream, which I talked about on the blog. But for the parents, I had fine wine, a very dry white. We also had a dessert Riesling for the homemade ice cream. And I made chicken pozole and duck rillette.
You have a very nice-looking duck confit.
Yes, the confit I served, so, and some of my homemade sausage. So the parents were like, can we come back? This is awesome. So I'm really into it. I'm really into it. I haven't done any updates in about a month or so, but I will.
Now, you see, now, podcast, done. You have your vehicle.
I love food, and I love this food. And Seattle, that's why I like coming here, the wine.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.